So the U.S. is not in the World Cup. Who should you root for instead? That's where we're going to start this week on Three Stories You Should Know. I'm joined by Craig Calcaterra of NBC Sports and by Julie DeCaro. She's a sports writer and host at Chicago's 670 The Score. Welcome back to both of you.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, Bill.
Julie, please advise. Help these people who are looking for a team to root for in the World Cup.
Well, I am here to help. So if you are lucky enough to be English or Mexican or Japanese or Iranian, you have it easy. You just get to root for your home country. The next step is to root for a team that sort of represents your family history. So if you're Polish, are you German? Now, Italians are out of luck this time, as are the Irish, which takes out a huge portion of the American populace. If you have no family history with any of the teams in the World Cup, you can pick a country that you have a connection to. So, for example, I lived in France for a while, so I'm cheering for France. If none of this works for you, you get to pick a team for fun. I'd recommend Iceland, tiny Norse volcano gods who qualified for their first World Cup, even though the whole country only really started playing after 2000. Nigeria is another really fun team. They play a cool style of soccer. They definitely have the coolest jerseys out there. Of course, if you want to cheer for recognizable players, you can cheer for England, but only if you want to be crushingly disappointed once again. Go forth, pick your team, and happy World Cup.
I went online and did one of those, you know, how to pick a World Cup rooting interest tests.
Yes.
And it didn't help me at all because it all asks you opinions about what kind of soccer you like. Do you like defense or offense? I have zero opinions about soccer at all. So that didn't help me a bit. So I went to the great grandmother route. She was from England. But what really clinched it for me was a two-pronged thing to root for England. One, I read somewhere they have about a 4% chance of winning this thing, and that might even be high, and I like lost causes. But the final clincher was I'm a fan of the 1990s Britpop band Blur, and their bass player wrote a parody soccer chant song in the late 90s called Vindaloo. And it's ridiculous, and no one got the joke, and English soccer fans adopted it unironically and chant it and sing it at soccer games, and it's the most ridiculous song you've ever heard in your life, and I like to sing it, especially when I've had some beers, so that's what I'm going with. Go England.
Completely legitimate.
I'm going to offer another alternative. In the last World Cup, one of my daughters rooted for Costa Rica because Costa Rica, she said, is one of the few countries without an army, so... In case you need to find reasons to root for some team, be creative. I took that survey as well, Craig, and Spain popped up, which is absolutely right. So I am prepared to certify the survey as completely scientifically valid.
You know, we had some great people make suggestions to me on the air the other night. Like one guy is from Cairo, Illinois, so he's cheering for Egypt. Another guy is from Peru, Illinois, so he's pulling for Peru.
Perfect.
So there's really any number of ways that you can pick your team in this. Just it has to be fun.
All right. In a Washington Post op-ed this week, Deborah Epstein explains why she resigned from the NFL Players Association Commission on Domestic Violence. She's the co-director of the Domestic Violence Clinic at Georgetown University Law Center. And she had worried that Damora Smith, the NFLPA's executive director, was only paying lip service to the issue of domestic violence back when she was asked to be on this committee. And now she said, yeah, she was right. It was lip service. She says the commission has paid no attention to the recommendations she's made, that the group has met only 3 times over the course of 2 years. This is more than discouraging to me because it makes it sound as if the players' union, or at least its leader, has adopted the same strategy as the league itself with regard to violence against women. That is, don't worry about it unless there's video. Should we be surprised that the union, or at least its leadership, hasn't done better than the league has done alongside this issue, Craig?
Not surprised. We should be saddened, but we should not be surprised. I think that same story has played out in almost any other sort of disciplinary situation in professional sports where, one, if you don't have video or if you don't have something shocking that could lead local newscasts or national newscasts, people aren't going to be as animated about the issues as they should, and that's regrettable, but it's just how it works. More specifically, sports unions have been notoriously bad taking the lead on matters that would actually result in discipline to their own members. There's some understandable reasons for that, but with something as serious as domestic violence, given that there's been no leadership by the NFL either, you would hope someone would step in and take a moral and ethical stand on this.
Craig and I are both former attorneys. I spent a lot of time working with domestic violence victims as an attorney. So this doesn't surprise me, particularly coming from Demora Smith, who during the Ezekiel Elliott case was tweeting out stuff from the NLFPA Twitter account, basically taking his side and calling the woman a liar. Not only do we need to be educating the players, but we need to be educating the owners, the coaches, and apparently the union heads. It's been disappointing on both sides. You know, we had Lisa Friel come in for the NFL to head up that side of the domestic violence investigations. She has been someone very active in the DV community for a long time, and I've been crushingly disappointed in her work since she's been there. And, you know, if as long as there is really no desire to discipline these guys on the NFL side, on the employer side, why should the employees be out there wanting to discipline themselves? It just seems like it's never going to happen.
Maybe the only positive in this story is that Debra Epstein has had the opportunity to express her discouragement with this pseudo effort and will move on to a more positive direction from that. Craig, close it out for us.
The Tampa Bay Rays, who most people shouldn't probably care about at all because, you know, they're the Tampa Bay Rays, have been doing something very, very odd this year. They don't have any good starting pitchers or not enough of them. So they have been using committees of relief pitchers to start games, complete entire games, and generally just make a mockery of the idea of the starting pitcher. They've lately even gone to something called an opener where they begin with a reliever with the idea that he's only going to get a couple of innings and then they're going to move on to other relievers. And it hasn't worked very well, again, because they're the Tampa Bay Rays and their players aren't very good. The reaction is outrage, it's shock, and it's even proposals to change the rules of baseball to prevent a team from using their relief pitchers like this. What fascinates me about this is, on one hand, I get it. Baseball is traditional. Baseball marks the time, as that hacky horrible movie once said. Baseball has no idea, and the fans have no idea, and the media have no idea, I think, how to deal with change, and we just want some constancy, dang it.
I mean, if there is one sport that sort of embodies get off my lawn among the fans, it's baseball, right?
And they have a lawn.
Baseball is really falling behind, and they keep being concerned that they're losing the millennial generation and the digital generation after that. But there is absolutely no innovation in this game. We looked at the World Baseball Classic. We've got all these guys having fun. Homers, bat flips, all that kind of stuff. And then we've got immediately a bunch of old white guys, no offense, screaming their heads off about how this isn't how the game is played. Javi Baez plays here for the Chicago Cubs. He's one of the most exciting players to watch. And all we hear from other baseball fans is what a horrible person Javi Baez is because he's flashy and fun to watch. So it's a real problem baseball has, both on the field and in the fan base. And if they want to get to the next generation, some of this stuff's going to have to change.
I'm going to defend the Rays on this particular sort of innovation. If you're not going to be competitive, at least be entertaining, be innovative perhaps, and hey, be controversial. Give people something to talk about, even if it's something that they hate. Craig, wrap it up for us.
Well, first I'm going to note that Julie called us old men and said no offense.
I was going to pretend that hadn't happened.
I mean, it's true, but, you know, still, come on, man. Oh, anyway, that aside, you know, the best thing that spun out of this is in my writing about baseball, whenever the Rays play, rather than, you know, name five or six pitchers that go in a game, I just refer to the Rays staff as Johnny Holstaff. That's a guy. Every day, Johnny Holstaff is pitching for the Rays, and it just makes my recaps and write-ups much easier.
And Holstaff is pretty much the workhorse of the pitching staff.
Yeah, he's going to have a lot of appearances this year.
My guest for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been Julie DeCaro. She's a sports writer and an anchor for Chicago's 670 The Score, and Craig Calcaterra of NBC Sports. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you very much.